Morning. I was just told a Scottish expression. Mo told me that there's a Scottish expression that says to be curried in. Do you Scots that are here know and understand that? I'd never heard that before, but to be cuddled. And it's my prayer that each of you today will have a sense of being cuddled by God in his love for you today at the end of the day. Yeah. Okay, it is terrible, really terrible, that they're not having Sabbath school. It wasn't my choice, but I happen to be the Sabbath school director of the union at the union, and here I am supporting this sabotage of Sabbath school. This is terrible, but I hope to make it somewhat Sabbath school in our discussion this morning. And what time, Paul, what time do we finish? What time do I have to stop? So what time do we stop?
Well, we won't have a bell, back to 11.
Okay. Well, that's broken another rule of Sabbath school. You don't have a class that goes on and on like that. Anyway, okay, we are going to start with a video clip. And Steve, I forgot to say, would you stop it when the bottom line comes up? On this video clip, there's a bottom line that finishes the video clip with, and just freeze it there if possible.
Right, have a go.
Have a go, yep. That's the place to stop it. What's wrong with that advert?
Honest.
That's it. You got it. This is Skoda is part of the Volkswagen Group, and I drive a Golf, which I like very much. But there's the problem there, isn't it? Skoda, Volkswagen, Audi, with their high standards that you can trust all the way through, and then we discovered that they're not honest. There's the problem of the gap between the standards that they have and the lie. And in the end you begin to ask, well, what can we trust? There was a company called Exxon some years ago that has a list of its values, very high standards that it had, until, you remember the Exxon Valdez that crashed at the ship that all the oil came out, and then the company floundered and went to pieces, and eventually when it was investigated, they found it was totally corrupt. The bosses of Exxon were just enriching themselves, and it was just corrupt. But they had this list of values, and then there's this gap between the behaviors. And that's what I want to touch on this morning and this weekend. What do we do about this gap? Let me tell you a couple of stories. Yeah, we can turn that off. You're good. I think I've told the story here in Crete before, but for those of you who don't know it, I can tell it again. When Karen and I finished at Andrews, we flew to New Zealand so that Karen could meet my family and they could approve of my new wife. But on the way, we stopped in Western American Samoa, and we were to catch a plane, a smaller plane, across to Western Samoa, so Karen could see where I was born and brought up. But we had a number of hours to waste in Pango Pango, American Samoa. And so I said to Karen, why don't we go into the town and let's see what we can see. And I knew there was an Adventist church in town, so I said, maybe we can get seen. So I looked up in the telephone book and found the pastor's name and phoned the pastor. And I said, we happen to be in Pango. Is there any chance that we could visit and see the Adventist church? in Pangapango. And he said, sure. Actually, he said, I'm going to be in town this morning. And you can come from the airport and get a taxi and come to the town hall clock. And he said, I will meet you at the town hall clock. Thank you very much. I'll meet you at the town hall clock. Then I said to him, how much did the taxi cost? And he said, Samoan money is called tala or dollars. And he said, 20 tala. Which sounds a lot, but it's not. I said, okay, 20 tala. I said, that's fine. So we went out, and as I think most of you know, I lived in Samoa till I was 10, and probably Samoan was probably the mother tongue, though both languages were spoken in the home, but I spoke it regularly. But I'd forgotten a lot. But as we walked out to the taxi rank, I heard a taxi driver say, a couple of tourists, he spoke it in Samoan, a couple of tourists, I'm going to make some money today. But he didn't know that I understood. So we got in the taxi, and as we were driving off along into Pango, I said to the driver, how much will it cost? And he said, 40 tala. So he doubled the price. And Karen said, but the pastor said 20. I said, I know. But I said, Karen, you know, this guy could actually be a distant relative of mine, and they don't have a lot of money here, and we can afford 40 tala. Forget it. Let's just pay 40 tala. So we drove up to the town clock, and we got out, and I was paying him. I said, how much was it? He said, 40 tala. And I said, okay, and I was cutting it out, and I was looking around at the same time. I said, Karen, there's the pastor. Obviously the pastor. He looked like me. And I said, he's obviously the pastor. And the taxi driver looked as well, and then he said, 20 tala. And I said, what? He said, I said, you said 40. He said, no, 20. I said, okay. So I paid him 20, and he drove off. And then the pastor came over, and he recognized us, and I said, something strange just happened. He said, what? I said, the taxi driver told us 40 tala, but when we got here, he charged me 20 when he saw you. He said, that's interesting. He's a church member. All right. Let me tell you a different story. This is a colleague of mine who's in America, a pastor. But he was visiting Scotland, and he spent a week with us on holiday. And we were talking about lots of things. But he was telling about his family, and he told me about one of his boys. He said, we love this son of ours to pieces. He grew up with us in our home, baptized, and then moved off to uni and just left the church. We don't see him anymore. And he said, it just breaks our hearts. Pray for him all the time. And we know God's going to work in his life. But he said, one Sabbath, he was at that time in a conference director, and he was at a church, going to a church where he knew the town in which his son lived. So he emailed his son and said, son, I'm going to be preaching in such and such a church on Sabbath. I would love to see you. Please come to church just so I can see you. So he went to church in that town, and he said during Sabbath school, he was sitting up like where Bob was, and he kept looking back. Whenever somebody came in, he'd look back to see if it was son, and his son didn't come. And then, divine service, and now he's up on the platform, and he's sitting with the platform party. And he said you could see the car park on one side. And every time a car pulled up, he'd look to see if it was son. He said, Lou, I was so excited about seeing my son. And then he said all the preliminaries were finished. And it was time for him to stand up to take the service. And just before he stood up, he saw a car pull in. And out of it came his son. And he said, Lou, my heart began to pound. My boy was coming to church. I was going to see my son. But a young lady got out with him. The two of them went round, and in the city, he didn't see them for a while. They went round to the entrance of the church. And now he's at the pulpit. And now he sees them going back to the car and get in and drive off. And he thought, oh, maybe they came just to say they couldn't come. He didn't know what had happened. He preached his sermon, finished, went down the hall, to the back of the church, to the front door, and then a deacon was there. And he says to the deacon, did you see a young man and young lady come into the church very late, just before the sermon? And the deacon said, I saw them. And did you see the length of her skirt? I told her, young lady, you do not come to our church dressed like that. You go home, get dressed properly before you come back. And I remember this pastor saying, Lou, I wanted to punch him, but I wasn't allowed to. He said, it was just so painful. My boy wanted to come to church, and a deacon decided there is a value higher than grace, whatever that value was in his mind, and that value comes first. Just as the taxi driver thought, the value of making some money is higher than the value of honesty. Do you see the gap between the values? And yet they're both values. Okay, I would like you now to talk to somebody. I want you to share. Maybe you can share some stories yourself. It would be very interesting if we were willing all to talk, tell stories, because I've got a list of, I've been collecting stories about the values and behaviors like the two I've just told you. Be very interesting to hear your own stories of when you've encountered that sort of thing. I can't resist one that happened to me. I was with a pastor. This was when I was in the NEC and I was ministerial director there. And I went, drove off, and I'd just come back, coming down from Scotland to work there. I hadn't worked in the NEC. I was working there, and I was visiting one of the pastors. And when I got to his church, I won't even tell you which city it is. I got to his church, and we were going to his car to do some visits and some things together. And I said to him, what should I do with mine? He said, put it in the back of the church car park. Park it there, and when we've done for the day, I'll come back and we'll pick up your car again. So I've driven there, parked my car, and off we went. And spent the day. And then we came back, and he said, Lou, I'll just drop you up at the front, and you can run and get your car and make your way home. I said, I'm not fully sure of the route from here to the motorway. He said, it's very easy. You get your car, follow me down the road, and just keep following me. And when I get to the place where you turn off and leave me, he said, I will put my blinkers on, and you'll know. And he said, there's a big sign, M6, and just turn off and you're on your way. I said, that's great. So I got out of his car and ran around to the back of the church, and got into my car, was just about to drive off when a lady came running out of the church. She runs up to my car and thumps the glass. And I thought, whoa. And I wound the window down and said, what's wrong? She said, what do you think you're doing in our car park? You have no right to be in this car park. You think you can just park anywhere. What are you doing in here? Who said you could park here? And I said, sister, I said, I'm really, don't you sister me, she said. And I said, I'm a pastor. And she said, you're no pastor, you're a liar. I said, I really am. In fact, here comes your pastor. And the pastor saw what's happening, comes running up to the car park, runs up to the lady and says, sister, this is Pastor Edwards. He's the executive secretary at the NEC. And she turns to me and she said, you're always welcome here. It's this problem of the gap between our espoused values and our behaviors. Okay, this is what you're going to discuss. Turn to someone and talk about. What does the gap do to our witness? How does it affect our witness? Talk about it amongst yourselves, and then we'll share. Okay, I'm going to call you to order. We'll have more discussion in a minute. Can we have a lollipop stick? And Yvonne, can you do your runaround thing? Would anyone like to share? What did you talk about? What is the effect of the gap upon our witness? Would anyone like to share?
Survey, we had to go around everybody's houses in our local area and just with a clipboard and asking little questions about what they thought of church and religion. And I went to one house and the lady come and she was very interesting, and she was a Christian, and she went to one of the churches in Windermere, and then a minute later door flew open and it's her husband. who are you, what do you want, like this at me, and oh dear me, and he says, oh, you were Jehovah's Witness, and I just looked at him and I said, no, different company but same boss. And but to me that was a big gap, just in somebody's house, you know, a lady there who was very talkative, a Christian, very understanding, and yet her husband came across as being very anti-Christian. And I always remember that. I always thought, wow, it must have been a bit strange living in that household with two people with strong different directions.
So. Do you think that happens in Adventist households as well?
I don't know. Possibly when you've got one Adventist and one non-Adventist. Possibly.
Okay.
But between an Adventist husband and wife, no, I don't think so. Not in the Bennetts anyway.
I hope so. Harry.
Some years ago, my daughter Lila had been working in London and then moved up here to Crieff and started coming to church. And at the same time, Phil Lowe had also moved up here, and they got together. And eventually Lila moved in with him where he was living. And when she came to church the next week, someone greeted her and half-jokingly said, hello, you sinner. And Lila hasn't been back since.
When we used to run the camp meetings in North British Conference at Caton Bay, Scarborough, and I imagine 1,000 would come along to the 3 or 4 days, and so we had, our church had the whole site, so we were all church members or affiliated on that site, so you'd think that you could be safe. And one day I went to look at my car, and somebody had smacked in two doors. They had obviously either reversed in or gone into it, and there was no note, and nobody came up to make an announcement, I've hit a car. And I went around the campsite looking to see if I could find a damaged car that had hit me. And I thought, here we were all supposed to be Christians, all supposed to be honest, and yet somebody had done something and tried to get away with it. And I felt sad, because in Crieff one day my wing mirror was taken off while I was away, and there was a note on my windscreen, I'm so sorry I did this, this is my name and address and telephone number. I thought somebody could have got away, didn't even know. And yet on the Christian place, there was that gap between, can I get away with it, or honesty.
I remember the very first Sabbath that I came, when I came to live in Crieff, I came here and I sat over there on the end seat. I don't think it was the second or third row. Nobody else around. Then different ones started coming in, and then this couple came alongside me and said, excuse me, you're in my seats. So I had to move, and that was a really bad experience for me.
I could probably tell very similar stories to what's already been told, but I won't prolong that. But what I'd like to do, if I may, is explain something I did which has changed me for a time. About 15 months ago, it was the summer before the one just gone, I was with a friend in Falkland, went round Falkland Palace into the gift shop, and I saw a Celtic cross, which I bought, and I wore it for about a year. And what I noticed was that when I was in situations which made me want to go and kick somebody's bonnet, or punch somebody in the face, or whatever.
Were you at the camp meeting?
No. You know, any of those situations, I would realise, because I used to wear my cross outside my shirt, And this was a reminder, you can't treat other people like this, because this is a symbol of who you claim to be. And during that 12 months, I found myself being stopped on many an occasion from behaving as a non-Christian. And I'll just go and dig it out and start wearing it again.
Can you imagine that taxi driver, when he came back, when he drove back to the airport, and the fellow taxi driver is saying, "How much did you make?" What's he say? His options are, he was an Adventist, so I couldn't rip him off. What's that say? It's okay to rip off other people. Or he could have said, "Yeah, I made a killing. Made 20 tala extra." So lie? What does he say? And the rest of the taxi drivers, if one of them has a personal crisis at some time and wants to talk to somebody, why would he ever talk to an Adventist when he knows that Adventists lie? If this man represents the church, Adventists like him lie. Why would he want to go and find an Adventist as a person of integrity? Or the young lady who came to church. Why would she ever go back to an Adventist church? That problem of the gap. Matthew 23 is a very interesting chapter where Jesus talks about different values. He says, you know, you tithe mint and anise, but you neglect the weightier matters of the law. And tithing is a good thing. But when it comes above mercy, it's the bad thing. You know? And Jesus, in Matthew 23, goes through quite a few comparing values. These are the values of the Pharisees. This is the values of the kingdom. And the lower values trample the higher ones, in effect. And when we have value, like if you're top, and again, I am not against tithing. I'm not against decent dress. And I'm not against vegetarianism, I'm not against, but when those kind of values trounce the higher values of grace and mercy and kindness, patience, when they trounce them, and Jesus even talked about witnessing. He says, you guys witness, you cross land and sea to make a convert and make them twice as fit for hell. A horrendous thing to say. So when the values are upside down, okay, we're going to jump now to another discussion point. What do you think we can do? And I'd like to add another illustration. I read this article. In fact, I listened to it. I listened to podcasts. I think I learned how to listen to podcasts from Steve here. He told me I should listen to podcasts. So I listen to podcasts probably a couple a day when I'm walking. And I listened to this podcast about this organization and a method they have of doing the very best. It wasn't a church, but organization. It was a secular organization. But within it, there are these directors. Thomas, I have water, in case you're going for water. Yes. The system they have is no director goes forward with the plan except first he invites all the other departmental directors to shoot his plan. And so they sit down, and if it's my program, I would say, okay, why do you guys think this won't work? And each director can say, it won't work because. And only when I have met each of the objections of the other directors, and everybody can say, this is going to work, then this organization goes ahead with the plan. And I thought, that is team working. That's recognizing we are. It's better to have 10 brains than one. And when all the brains are working together to do the best outcome, it's going to work. Well, that's team wisdom. But I sit on a number of committees within our church, and I notice the director will bring a plan, or the president will bring a plan, and no one's allowed to criticize it. I wonder if you thought about, you have to put it very nicely, I wonder if you thought about this. Very gently, yes, I have. That's it, next question, you know. So we who talk about team, our teamness, actually in our behaviors, even at that kind of level, don't act as a team. We act as individuals, and he's doing that, nothing to do with me. And very often, I've been in committees where nobody says anything, but as we walk away, somebody will say, that won't work. That's a silly idea, you know, what a harebrained idea that was. And I'm thinking, why didn't we talk about it? And why can't we talk about it? What's wrong with our culture that we don't permit that? And yet we talk about being united and being a team. Okay, big question. How do we solve the problem? How do we deal with behaviors individually and some very often collectively that we look at happens in our church, and we hear stories about happens in our churches like the ones I've given, and I could give you a few more. Let me tell you one of Paul Klee, Bob's friend. Paul and Barbara were on holiday. It was a Caribbean place somewhere. And on the Friday, they decided to search for an Adventist church near the hotel where they were staying. They're on holiday. And they searched, and they could not find an Adventist church. So they said, doesn't matter, we're on holiday. What we'll do on Sabbath morning is take our Bible, a Sabbath school lesson, and a picnic lunch, and we'll go. There's lovely beaches all the way around where they were. And let's find a nice quiet spot and enjoy Sabbath together. So they're off. They're walking along, and they see people dressed nicely, tied suits on, and carrying their Bibles. And they said, these have got to be Adventists. So they follow them down the street, around the street, and there's a lovely Adventist church. And Paul says, that's brilliant. We can go to church today. Great. So they're walking up the steps to the church when a deacon steps out and says, where do you think you're going? And Paul says, we're coming to worship church. He says, you're not coming in our church dressed like this. And he said, we weren't dressed badly. We weren't in shorts. We had slacks and shirts on, but no tie and no jackets. You know, it was a tropical island. They said, you can't come in church dressed like this. And Paul didn't know what to say. He said, I was dumbfounded, you know. But then he said, we were saved. Because a second deacon turned up and said, wait a minute. You're Pastor Klee. And Paul goes, yes, that's me. And he said, you work at the division. Yes, he said. I have seen videos of your training program. Wonderful to see you today. But the first deacon says, but you're still not coming to our church dressed like that. Again, you've got this problem of the values. You know, we are a welcoming fellowship. And many times when I talk about this in churches, I make the point, how will that young lady who came with the pastor's son, how will she learn good standards unless you bring her into your fellowship? How is she expected to learn by sending her away? Problem of the gap. Okay. So there's this gap between our character, our stated character values, and our behaviors or our nature. I'm looking for suggestions from you how we go about solving and bridging the gap as individuals and as church organizations. And, you know, to be fair, I could have told you some positive stories. About 3 weeks ago, I attended a Churches Together conference for 3 days, and I went a little bit apprehensive. They invited a representative to come, and Ian Sweeney couldn't go, so he said, Luke, can you go? So I went, and I went a little bit trepidation because, you know, I was stepping into Babylon. But I was blown away by the number of people said who found me and said, you're the Adventist. They said, we saw your name on the list, and I've been looking for you. And so many of them would say, look, do you know so-and-so? They named people I didn't know, and they said, fantastic Christian. And I learned so much about Adventists. There was only one name I know, a Salvation Army gentleman came up and said, do you know John Surridge? I said, no, yes, I do, sorry. He said, what a wonderful Christian he is. Over and over, one gentleman, he said he was doing his doctorate in Edinburgh. He says, I got to know a man from Rwanda there. He said, I talked to him about what happened to him, and he said, I was just so touched by his Christianity and his forgiveness that he gave to people. And he said, he was the Seventh Adventist, first Adventist I met. He said, I was so impressed by him that he told me, Lou, you are not allowed, he lives in Birmingham, you are not allowed to come to Birmingham, but you contact me first to see if we can get together each time you come. I must get to know you better. And so some wonderful stories about outstanding Adventists who the gap seems to be at least narrow or maybe not there. How do we go about sorting the gap? That's the question. I want you to talk to each other now and come up with some practical suggestions of how we go about solving the gap. Okay, do we have any suggestions? And, you know, we're covering the topic again last night. We talked about how did Daniel know how to live against the flow and be the sterling character that he was against the flow of Babylon in which he lived. It's the same topic. Keith, microphone.
There was a very trite expression that came with a little band that has a real significance, and it's what would Jesus do? I mean, that little band on your wrist is a constant reminder, like Mike's cross round his neck. If you've got something that you can notice that reminds you how you should behave, it would make a significant difference to how we behave.
Okay.
We came to the conclusion that this is a problem, and the problem is largely down to the fact that we don't always recognise there's a gap in our own lives. It's so much easier to look at other people and see the gap. This came out in the recent MP's expenses fiasco. They came under a lot of criticism, you know, by the general public, and rightly so, when they were cheating. But I would put money on it if the majority of the general public who were criticising them were put in exactly the same situation, they would do exactly the same themselves. Mm-hmm. So the problem is, I think, largely seeing that there is a problem. There is a gap in your own life. And I think by ourselves, we're not really capable of doing that. But the Holy Spirit is what guides us. And sometimes it takes us to be found out before we know that there is actually a problem there. So the problem of what you do about it by yourself, I don't think you can do very much. The staying connected to the Holy Spirit, I think, is a solution to the problem.
Thank you, Gordon. But I do think that part of the that helps is beginning to talk about it. When organizations, churches begin to talk about it, what are our behaviors? And if grace is our core value, what kind of behaviors should we see and begin to question that? I think it's a slow process. I agree, and the Holy Spirit's working in that. But I think it's a good thing to begin talking about it. It's part of the process. Mike?
I think this question about talking is critically important. If we look around organisations that we interact with, and I think particularly, I had to go to Belfast some years ago, and there were issues with the return flight, and I just lost it. I absolutely went ballistic, and this is a long, long time ago, and utterly ashamed of it now, but it happened. And that sort of behaviour has to be dealt with. Now, I think of the situations we get into in our daily lives. We ring call centres. We go to places like M&S. Now, M&S are particularly good at dealing with customer complaints, and there are many organisations like that, John Lewis's. These organisations invest large sums of money in training their staff to deal with angry customers. And by and large, these organisations do it extremely well. But what do we actually do in the church? And I would suspect the answer is actually we don't do anything. We say, pray, or ask the Holy Spirit, and we're left on our own. But these are the sorts of things, I think, which come about, the change of behaviour comes about through discussion, through raising awareness, through pointing out new ways of dealing with situations which are likely, very likely, to arise within church and with dealing with unpleasant situations which have to be dealt with. And I think there is a really serious need for training.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. Tomorrow morning, I will be looking at particularly one organization that is outstanding in terms of service. And unfortunately, it's not a Christian organization, but I will look at how they embed the value of service into everything they do. And I wish, I look at this, and in recent years, I have done a lot of reading on different outstanding organizations and what makes them outstanding. And they do search their hearts, as it were, if you can use that expression, and then rigorously say, that's not a behavior that fits the value that we have, and we must change the behaviors. And I think that's very healthy. And I think that churches need to be talking about it and prayerfully ask God's Spirit, guide us as we think about this behavior, the behaviors that we have, and rigorously implement change, because that's, you know, the behaviors that I talked about are unacceptable. It is unacceptable that, I hope that pastor spoke to the taxi driver and says, that behavior is unacceptable as an individual. And I hope somebody spoke to that deacon and said that the way you treated that young lady is unacceptable. It is not part of who we are. And talking about it and confronting it is a very important part of change. Sorry, Jenny, Mike wants it once more.
Can I come back on that? You say someone ought to do it, but that is avoiding the issue. Is it, I would question, my responsibility? I went to a church in the south of England a long, long time ago, and I vowed and declared I will never go back there. So I walked away, and I haven't been back there. But what good does that actually do? Perhaps what I should have done was write to the senior pastor there and relate my experience to, not in an unpleasant condemnatory way, but to say, look, you've got an issue which needs to be dealt with.
Yeah. And the tragedy is that so many of our young people are leaving church because that behavior is unacceptable to them, and they just leave church. They're not prepared to stand up and say to the church, you can't do this. This behavior must not continue. Okay, we've got several hands and only a few minutes, so please keep it really short.
Yeah, the first part I was going to say has been covered by dealing with it through the church organization, but the gap is my gap. It's a bit like a marriage. You can't change your partner's bad habits. You've got to change your own.
And that's very true.
I find that it's been a long process, taking all my life, and there's a bit more to go yet.
Yep.
My conscience, I'm beginning to recognize it's really the Holy Spirit just whispering very, very quietly.
As Gordon said.
And if you don't listen to that first, almost inaudible voice, you find yourself doing it again and again.
Okay, so what Harry's saying is own the gap. Yeah. Own the gap. Just say, oh, that's other people's behavior. You and own your gap.
Yeah, and I'm a very slow learner. It took me 10 years to learn to dance properly.
We all are.
I just hope I've got another 10 years to work on this problem.
Right. Keep going, Jenny, because we need to finish.
At the heart of the Christian message, there's something that most people agree with, even if they're not Christians. That's do to others as you'd like them to do to you.
The gold standard.
And if everyone who approached a visitor at church would remember that, then they wouldn't send anybody away.
Gold standard.
Jesus was our example. He accepted all sorts of people. They came to him, and he was glad they came to him. And in time, he changed their lives. And this idea that we're something special, I've seen it in Adventism. I think even in the leadership of Adventism, there's something that projects that we're very special people. We're a cut above others. My wife has had experience of this as a non-Adventist coming to Adventist churches. People having the idea, oh, well, you know, you're not really a Christian. You're not really good enough for here.
Second class.
She's had the opposite, of course. Otherwise, she wouldn't be here today, would she? Mm-hmm. She's had the opposite in other churches. When she first went to church, the people grabbed her and said, come on.
This is a good church.
You know, this is a good church this way, so it's difficult to... But what to do about it? Surely the whole basis of Christianity is do to others you would like them to do to you.
Okay, let's move on. Good church, but we're never perfect.
Good morning, everyone. I used to belong to a tiny little church in Somerset West, South Africa. And one day, a young man came into church. He had extremely long hair, beautiful long hair, which he left loose, very torn jeans, well, that was the fashion at that particular time, a sweater, and earrings. And I'm happy to say that the whole church as a whole behaved exactly the same. They welcomed him and left it at that. No one spoke about his clothing. Happy to say he came back and he continued coming back for the next almost a year. And gradually we noticed a change. First of all, his clothing changed. The torn jeans went and he started wearing casual clothing. And then the earrings disappeared. The hair got slightly shorter and shorter until eventually it was like any other man in the church. And lo and behold, one day he came suited up. And I'm happy to say that nobody ever said anything to him. They just welcomed him and led by example. So to me, that's the example. That's how you solve the problem.
Thank you. Adventism is better caught than taught.
I spent 36 years in retail, and when you're dealing with the public, you have to think, what do they need? What do they want? What do they need? And if we can just do that, when we're confronted with any situation whatsoever, we're dealing with people. And if we ask, what do they need, not what we want, or need, then we will be doing it the way Christ did it. He went around dealing with other people's needs.
This organization I'll talk about tomorrow is expert at anticipating people's needs, and I wish we were. Steve.
I get the microphone at last.
Don't let anybody else have it. We've got to finish, all right?
Right, we're going to finish on time. Right, okay. I'm going to speak up, as I do often in Sabbath school class. I feel sorry for the Pharisees because they get a bad rap. All the Pharisees were trying to do was the right thing. And I think we have to be careful. The man in the door who turned someone away was expressing a value. And that value was that in order to approach God, the almighty creator of the universe, you need to shape up a bit. You need to do this seriously and with intent. Now, that's a value.
That's a value.
And that's a value that most of us would probably agree with to some degree. Where we get a little bit confused is the order of values.
Exactly.
And I think what we struggle... I mean, nobody's being bad. No one's deliberately saying, you know, go and get lost to these folk who come in. They're doing it because they think they're doing the right thing.
Yep.
What needs to be impressed upon the church is what the right thing actually is. Back to what Mike says, we need to articulate that this is the value. This value of grace, of acceptance, is actually a bigger value than preparing yourself correctly to meet the creator of the universe.
Okay.
And we need to say that explicitly. And I think what we're hoping is that we're going to learn this by osmosis or something. You know, we're just going to filter in somehow or other.
Thank you, Steve. I'm sorry, I'm cutting out a couple of other hands up. We got to stop. But Steve's right. It's the inverted value system that's part of our problem. And one author I read said there are around 600 valid values, but it's the order that you have them in that matters. And when you put a minor value above, as I said, you put a minor value above a major value, it tramples on the major value. That's what's so difficult to understand. But if you understand that, and that's when Jesus says, and for me, one of the most powerful texts in Scripture is Matthew 5:20, I think it is, where Jesus says, accept your righteousness. And I'm not a fan of the clear word, but the clear word says this, accept your values exceed the values of the scribes and Pharisees, you will in no single case make it into the kingdom of heaven. Wow, it is such a powerful statement. But Jesus, I keep the law and I do this and I this. Yeah, but you trample on my values, my core values. You're not part of the kingdom. Except your values exceed the values that the scribes and Pharisees have, which they had good values. But they hadn't worked out which were the higher ones. And Jesus is saying, except your values exceed the values that the scribes and Pharisees have, you in no case enter the kingdom of heaven. Now that's a smack in the face. Could be for many Christians, including Adventists, who think I'm in the kingdom of heaven. Not if your values are the wrong way around. You're not in the kingdom of heaven. We've only dealt with half the material I wanted to deal with this morning, but I hope we'll continue in the sermon and tomorrow. Thank you for your attention. Paul?